Welcome back from the break. Josh Brickman from Oracle. Thank you for showing up on time. We have two presentations in this segment before the end of the day activities. I just want to mention that after this presentation, the following presentation, there will be a wine and cheese reception in the break room with the exhibits are. And if you have not signed up yet for Dine Around Ottawa and are interested, just stop by reception. I'd like to introduce to you Steve Schmalz from RSA, the security division of Dell. Or is that not official yet?
Not official yet.
Okay, fair enough. And he's going to be presenting a very interesting talk called The Lifecycle of a Software FIPS 140 Module, The Challenge and Impact of Sunsetting. And I think you probably wanted to say a certain product name, but you didn't.
No.
Thank you. Welcome, Steve.
So I don't quite have as large an audience as Valerie did about 2 hours ago. But you know, it's been interesting as I've been listening to the talks today. The reason I wanted to do this presentation is because a year or so ago I heard about the proposed sunsetting regulations, and back 15 years ago when I joined RSA, I sold the Be Safe product, and 14 years ago, I think I attended one of the first public FIPS 140 conferences. Now, they had those for a couple of years, then they stopped having them for about a decade, and now we have this conference, which is doing very well. But back then, I saw a presentation, and it was about their view of how a software module should be, how you should be able to create a software module, and that software module, that cryptographic software module, validated to what at the time was FIPS 140-1. Should be something that you could then, if you got all your crypto from it, you should be able to meet the FIPS 140 requirements, which it was, I don't want to say it was new, but at the time RSA actually had a FIPS validated module. Given that this is in 2001, and that module was, for those of you who know the arcane history of RSA BSafe, was called CryptoC. That module was validated, but that validation wasn't for customer consumption. That validation was done because the labs were saying, gee, a lot of people are sending your stuff to you for validation. Could you do me a favor and let us validate your module every time you come out with a new one? And then based on that work, when our other customers come in with your module, they can, that'll make it much more quicker for us to validate it, and maybe it'll make it easier on the customers. Well, I saw that. I worked with the product management at RSA. We had some discussions, and I said, look, we should be able to build a module that nobody needs to validate. It's already validated. They should be able to drop it in underneath their software and achieve the FIPS 140 mandate. And in fact, there's a gentleman in the back who helped make that happen. So RSA had a product, a FIPS 140 validated cryptographic module, which basically meant that we subsumed all of the effort and time that it took to get the validation, and then we could provide it to our OEMs, with people who are OEMs, who are building other products. So when I saw the sunsetting requirements, my first reaction was, do they know what that's going to do to this OEM chain? And in fact, when you think about, some of you may or may not be vendors who use other products. If you don't use a FIPS module from another vendor, you certainly use other components from other vendors, probably when you do your development. And this dependency and this idea of sunsetting, I didn't know whether or not that had been fully considered when they were looking at this new regulation. So I went back to, now this is last year, so RSA BSafe had already been end of life. Still a lot of people out there using it, but we're no longer selling it for real. But I still thought it was an interesting problem, and in fact, internally, people were interested in talking about it as well. So I decided to develop this talk, and where I wanted to focus was on the OEM question, and I'll talk a little bit about internally at RSA, where we still use our FIPS modules, how that impacts the issue as well. But the life cycle is really a pretty straightforward one, at least the way I'm going to talk about it. You know, from the when modules are validated, it may take, and this is, by the way, this is sort of an aggregation of information from multiple vendors, but it's 6 to 18 months to integrate that module into an OEM's product. Now, it could be quicker, it could be short, it could be longer, but in general, 6 to 12 to 18 months. Once that's done, a lot of time the product that a FITS module gets integrated into is actually a piece that's used by another product. So this can get layered. So you could go from having a module validated to it being a year and a half later before that product that uses that gets onto the market, or it could be 3 years later before that product gets onto the market. It all depends. But what's important when you talk about the life cycle of these cryptographic modules is that these software modules is that not only is there this chain of hitting one OEM after maybe another, maybe even a third, but at some point it gets to the end users. The end users may not even deploy the product for 6 months or so. Depends on the particular use, but it could take time. And even after the product has been deployed, and this is an important consideration, I think, the use of that product is sort of in the hands of the end user. So this is when I'm talking about the life cycle of a crypto module, it's more than just it gets developed, it gets validated, it gets integrated into a product, and then maybe that in turn gets integrated into another product. What's really important is, does it get used correctly when the end user gets their hands on it? Well, depending on how deeply it's buried in the OEM product, it may or may not be used correctly. It may have to be configured in such a way there's no other way to use it but in the appropriate FIPS mode, etc. But in a lot of cases, there are configurations that are made, and there are decisions at the end user as to whether or not to turn FIPS on or not, whether or not to run it in FIPS mode. So as you look at this sort of life cycle, this very pared down cartoonish life cycle, there's an important point here when it comes to enforcement. So all of you know how these things are enforced. All of you know why people procure FIPS 140 modules, at least in the U.S. federal government. That's because there's a regulation that says they have to, and the decision about whether or not they meet FIPS 140 is made at that procurement time. There's really no other, that's not quite true. There's another place. That is, if you're going to do common criteria on your product, and that product uses crypto, and that's, of course, being provided by a module which hopefully has been through FIPS 140, now it is, then that'll mandate FIPS 140 as well. But there's very few other places in the lifecycle of a cryptographic module where the FIPS 140 compliance is checked, where the mandate is actually enforced. So let's look at a real-world example. And I apologize, I was thinking when I was preparing this talk, in fact, let me get a feel for my time here. When I was preparing the talk, I was thinking of doing maybe multiple real-world use cases, but I think this is actually probably good that we just focus on one. RSA had as its customers, and in fact it's still in use, the majority of the large printer manufacturers in the world. And they have a mandate to meet FIPS 140 when they sell those printers to the U.S. government. They have encryption and other cryptographic functionality built in. So when these large printers are developed, there's a life cycle which I have here. There's a 3-year development cycle during which if you want to integrate any software components, if you want to integrate anything into the finished product, sort of from the start you have to have information about that software or other component available. They're not going to start development on this printer during this 3-year cycle without knowing as much information as they can about all the components that are going into it. Now once the printer actually hits the market, some of you who own printers at home may be surprised, but it's up to 7 years that it can sit out there. These can be pretty expensive investments. I know that in our world, we're software revs so often and so frequently that the idea that a product would have a 7-year life cycle is a little shocking. But these numbers are aggregated from all the large printer manufacturers. Now, as one printer is being developed over the 3-year cycle, deployed, and it has 7 years sort of life on the market, the printer manufacturers start sometimes immediately, sometimes with a little delay, working on the next release. So I've got it where that next release is right as the first printer goes to the market, the second printer starts its development, the second version of the new printer. That could actually be further out. That could be 6 months to a year. It sort of varies. But rarely do they overlap where, you know, you're developing one, you haven't released it yet, and you develop another. So what I have here is that the cryptographic module, I'm actually assuming that it's that it's available from the very start. And that's an assumption that we'll get to later when we talk about the effects and the implications of sunsetting. I'm doing that because these manufacturers can actually be working with the provider of the FIPS module. They can get the FIPS module after it's gone through the lab, and in that 6 months to a year period where it's going through the paperwork phase, so to speak, where it's getting reviewed by NIST, by the CMVP, and so they can actually get their hands on it and start working with it before it actually gets a certificate, and they usually do that. So it's not like they have to wait for the validation and then get their hands on the module. They can get it a little bit before that. So let's talk for a second. If you don't know about the sunsetting, new sunsetting requirements and implementation guidance, the proposed sunsetting requirements, raise your hand. All of you know about this, right? So I can jump through this pretty quickly. I think what's important here, other than the dates and the timelines and, you know, when things go, when things can be moved to the legacy validation list, is the fact that there's guidance from the CMVP, the federal agencies, that they can make risk assessments when it comes to the continuous use of modules that might have been moved from the active to the legacy validation list. That's a good thing. I've been at lots of talks today, and we've been talking about this issue of patching systems and what effect that has on a FIPS module and the validation state of a particular system. So in this case, they're being proactive, and they're actually saying, you, the government organization, make a decision. If you think it's safe to keep using it, while the vendor may go back and do revalidation or do whatever they have to do, you can do so. So that's actually an important piece, and I think one that that's one of the nice parts of the sunsetting requirements in my book. The rest of this is about vendors may how they can go about reinstating a module. There's several proposals out there. I'm not going to go into details about what they are, but there's going to be some process by which you either indicate that your module should be allowed to continue to stay in the active list, or where you go back and do a revalidation to bring it up to date to make sure it stays in that list. And there's going to be, of course, a various amount of time when it comes to how long it'll, what kind of efforts you need to take to make sure that that module is still available to your customers. So let's take a look now at the impact of these sunsetting requirements. It might be a little bit of hyperbole when I say that the module might actually be out of date. It might be going through sunsetting by the time it actually goes into use. So maybe a little extreme. But there are some customers, unfortunately I couldn't get permission to talk about particular customers, but some where the OEM process is such that it's quite possible that the product will be arriving at the end user in about a 3 or 4 years after the original FIPS module has been integrated into some component, which then got integrated into other components. Another important point to make, which sort of will roll into the rest of the discussion, those who were procured the module, the government agencies who have already made procurements of products that have the FIPS module in them, that decision has already been made. Remember, I talked about enforcement. I heard in previous talks where there might be situations where vendors are updating code or updating a product that has a FIPS 140 module inside of it, and where that update might break the FIPS 140 validation, and where they send out alerts if that's the case, where the customer has to decide, do I patch my system or do I go out of compliance? I think that's probably rare in a lot of cases, especially in the civilian government. Once a product is procured, the fact that it does or does not meet the FIPS 140 requirement is sort of off the books to whatever organization's job it is to make sure that they're meeting these requirements. So the idea that that a module will be sunsetted and that agencies will go and do an inventory and try to figure out whether or not they've got these sunsetted modules in play or not, and if they do something, I don't think that's going to happen. So they either won't have the resources or they won't have the motivation. And by the way, if they don't have the resources, it's not because they don't care. It's because there are a lot of other security issues that are taking up their time. So the impact of the sunsetting regulations, in my view, is going to fall on the vendors themselves who are implementing the validation. So there is there's sort of no one else in the chain who will take on the responsibility of trying of alerting anybody, or of even worrying if the validation is still in place. So now let's take a look at a best case timeline applied to this printer example. So remember, I said that that you could start the development, the 3-year development cycle, and you could start with the crypto module available, which means that you go maybe a year into the cycle and you get the validation, you get the certificate. So there's 2 years before the printer's released. Then there's another. Did I do the math right here? Actually, I guess I didn't. That's 3 + 1 = 4. I apologize. But at 6 to 7 years, that's when the sunsetting rule hits. At that point, you may or may not have another printer on the market. Now, it's important to realize that any new update to the firmware or the software on these printers, there's around a six month to a year effort, which goes into taking the new piece of code and going through the Q&A and getting it into the product, and then getting it out to a customer. More importantly, it's costly, and the printer company doesn't want to do it. So you're in a situation where, for the initial customer who bought the printer, at about 3 to 4 years into the life of that printer, may or may not be faced with the situation, and may not even know. But if they are faced with the situation, they either need to obtain a new printer, or update the printer. If they decide to update it, it may be 6 months to a year before they get it updated. That leaves about a year where it's not in compliance. Now, if the reason for doing the sunsetting is to make sure that you don't have crypto modules out there that are out of date and are out of date because of legitimate security reasons, if that's your concern, then you put a situation in place where there's almost certainly going to be product out there through this OEM chain, which is going to be out of compliance. I don't see any way that this isn't going to happen. So, I mean, you could imagine ways with this. You could keep this from happening. The printer manufacturer could say, I'm going to make whoever provided me, let's say it's RSA, I'm going to make them do the sunsetting. I'm going to make them determine if the module is up to date a year before. So instead of waiting 5 years, they're only going to wait 4 years. That's not going to be something I think that's practical. A couple reasons. One, if you ask RSA, they're going to say, no, our module's fine. It's going to pass. Don't worry. You know, we're going to take a look at it. It's going to meet all the requirements. It's going to be fine. By the way, those saying that in the back of their mind know that the implementation guidance that has gone out over the last 5 years has almost certainly changed something, which is going to require some type of paperwork, some type of change, some type of tweak, which means that, no, when you're going through the process, there's going to be some delay as they get the recertification. So there's going to be this gap. In my book, there were a couple of motivations for doing the sunsetting, right? One is to get old modules off the list that obviously are not even close to meeting any customer requirements, and they have horrible out-of-date components in them, and may even be insecure. But there are a lot of modules out there that are fine, and if those modules are fine, the idea, and when I say fine, maybe good to go to the next slide. 5 minutes? Okay. So let me quickly finish this up so I can give people a chance to ask questions. There is a security issue here, obviously. Obviously, there are modules out there that are old and need to be replaced, and the old rules just would keep them on the book, so to speak. But if there are issues, if there are security issues, something should have already triggered a revalidation. Something should have already forced reconsideration of that module. That is if there are significant security issues. If they're not significant security issues, then there's no need to look at the module. And by the way, there's really two reasons why you might want to look at a FIPS module, right? One is there's an actual software vulnerability. By the way, that's probably forced revalidation anyway. The other is that algorithms might have gotten old, key links requirements might have changed, etc. The second piece is important because it would be nice if you're worried about the fact that I can no longer use RSA 1024 and I have to use RSA 2048, it'd be nice if you would allow the end user to reconfigure their use of the module and to only implement RSA 2048. Now, I know where we stand right now, and that is that something is supposed to be enforced inside the FIPS boundary, that the use of the appropriate key links, appropriate parameters, et cetera. But we live in a world where, and this is supposed to be actually the meat of my talk, so thanks for the warning before. We have vulnerabilities that hit every day because of software bugs. And some of those are horrendous. And if they are not fixed, they allow exploits in our systems. Those are important. We have procedures in place to address those. Maybe not the best procedures, but we have them in place. Now, if the way that we address those issues here is so time-consuming that it means that the vulnerable code is still out and being used for weeks and months, and that users are either forced to break the FIPS validation, break the compliance, or use secure code, then I think we have an issue. One thing we could do is to allow reconfiguration as a stopgap. Now, I'm not talking about changing the rules of the FIPS validation. I'm talking about providing guidance to end users, telling them what they can do to mitigate threats, what the CMVP thinks are legitimate actions to make the use of the product as secure as possible given the limitations, such as the fact that there still exists an implementation, maybe a bad random number generator, maybe one that's no longer approved for use. Allow them just not to use it, to turn it off, assuming, of course, that the FIPS module has alternative random number generators or alternative algorithms available. So that's one area that I think that the CMVP should look at. Finally, this whole issue of issues with FIPS modules in the field while deployed needs to be totally rethought. And if I was going to say a lot about that, I don't have the time. But fortunately, a lot has already been said at the conference. I've heard Apostle talk about new regimes for rapid revalidations of modules. A little bit iffy whether or not what I've heard so far could actually be applied across the FIPS 140 revalidation process. But I've heard other people express issues with the way that typical software updates happen with deployed software and how that doesn't really jive with what you need to do with a FIPS module. So this has been addressed at the conference, fortunately. So that's the end of my presentation. Sorry about rushing in the end. If I can take questions.
Please use the microphone. Thank you.
Trying to understand the problem better.
So can you back up here?
Yeah, while you're pulling that up, you mentioned that you had that red face where it is out of compliance. Yep, that one. Yeah, so where you say that, you know, red face, 6 to 10 months, from 6 months to the 10th month, out of compliance.
Yes.
The rule of sunsetting does not apply to deployed products. It only applies to products that are sold since then.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah.
But the motivation is that you're sunsetting them for a reason.
Correct. And if you make it so it's a cost benefit analysis, right? So if you make it applicable to deployed products for the reasons that you mentioned, it just becomes intractable. No one is going to upgrade. Federal government is not going to upgrade their infrastructure every 5 years. But the idea is that on a rolling basis, as you sunset the crypto modules. And just one more point, yeah. You asked why the fire rule. My understanding is that it's based off what other programs are doing. So, for example, UCAPL has a similar sunsetting rule, and after a certain while, you get off the list. So that's why it was in alignment with that. They took the larger of the sunsetting rules. I think so. UCAPL was 3 years. Common Criteria is 2 years. They went with 5 years.
Yeah. And so remember at the beginning. I noted that. The CMVP provided guidance, saying that organizations can make decisions. And so I think that's good. I just think they should go a little bit further and maybe give even further guidance as to if a module is sunset because when you go back to do the revalidation, you find out it's got something really wrong with it.
Well, that's different, right? So that has been done, right? So when When OpenSSL had the Heartbleed issue, there was guidance put out. When the dual ECDRBG came in, they did very quick revalidations. If you could show that that was removed and could not and could not be used, very quickly you could get back onto the list.
So the definition of quickly, I think, is an issue here. I'm thinking of a world where with the Heartbleed issue, you wanted to immediately.
Yep.
Fix the problem.
Yep, absolutely.
And obviously guidance was provided that you could fix the problem and then take care of the validation later, right?
Yep.
But it sort of brings...
Looking at Heartbleed itself, it wasn't inside the fixed module.
No, it wasn't.
That's absolutely the case. That is the case. So let's imagine that something...
But yeah. It does affect... Yes and no, right? It affects, Tim, it affects deployed product because there are other products that use OpenSSL and the crypto boundary was the larger module, so.
So, by the way, I just want to use that as an example because you're absolutely right. Heartbleed was outside the boundary. But if you had something similar that happened and it was inside of a FIPS boundary, we need a quicker reaction time. In fact, I think the process by which you go through the initial validation is good, but the way that you handle the health of modules after validation, and I'm only echoing what half a dozen speakers have said, I think that completely needs to be rethought. And I'm very, very optimistic hearing what Apostle said and what other people from the CVMP have said that this is actually being addressed. So, which is something I did not realize that was being addressed as strongly until I came here. So that's all good news. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Tim. Tim promised to heckle me during my my talk.
And he did not. He was good. So we have one more presentation, and I found I was in the unusual position of having to cut off the presenter for the next presentation because he was asking a question, so I decided not to do that.
Gaming the system.
You are. You're totally gaming the system. You just gave yourself, you just gave away 5 minutes of your own time. Okay. So this is the last talk of the day. Let's see. Okay. Let me just do quick intros. Okay. We'll be